This is an important moment in history. It is September the 2nd of 2007. We have convened together a people's court. In some sense, all courts come together in moments of history. But we see this as and they come together to deal with history, to resolve human conflicts, human episodes. But this court, which is a people's court, is a special court because we rise above the jaded and racist limitations of American imperialism and the shadow of Dred Scott or racism which lives in the American court system. Just doing this, just being here, does manifest a sense of accomplishment, a sense of liberation. It is indeed a significant challenge to the limitations imposed by U.S. imperialism. But final people's victory, the final victory of the peoples, is not yet here. Final victory requires a determination to find the truth, the will to recognize and to face the truth, and the courage to speak the truth to ourselves, to speak the truth to power and to the world. Liberation requires that we live the truth, and we are ever confident that truth crushed to the earth shall surely rise again. Finding, facing, speaking, and living the truth demands that we make history. It is not just enough that we be victims of history. We must make history. We must be masters of our own destiny. Today we make new history. This chapter has already begun. Our new African people, our blacks, people on the Gulf Coast, have refused to be victims. They have become survivors. And they begin on August the 29th. They begin to resist and to survive. And so we've had the great fortune to join together with this assembly, the heroism, or the heroism, the sheroism of the brothers and sisters of Katrina. It began with their resistance, and we have had the opportunity to share their sorrow, to share their tears. We have seen before us both men and women cry, and we can imagine the tears of our children who were not here. It begins with the resistance of Roderick Neal, left to die in the jail in New Orleans. It begins with his swimming and fighting and struggling to save himself amongst filthy waters which had feces and human waste in it. It began with his struggle as he was dehydrated, as he was sick of diabetes, and he had high blood pressure. It began as Roderick said that he would not die. It began as his comrades, the inmates, who they called thugs and looters. It began as these young brothers helped carry him from a jail that the guards would not carry him from. It began as the guards ate food and refused to feed these other inmates, and as Roderick and his other comrades refused to die. This history began, this history that we make, that we are not just mere victims of, begin as we look to Charlene Smith, and as we imagine the ridiculousness of this criminal system that puts people who are trying to survive in jail, criminal themselves who put people in jail for allegedly committing crimes. It begins as Charlene Smith goes to jail for many months because she cashed the check in order to survive and to feed her children, as she was mistreated in these cells, and as the other sisters were mistreated in these cells, as the inmates were mistreated, as she said, 20 people was crushed into cells in small places. It begins as our brothers and sisters are trapped in the Superdome, and as they are at the convention center, and they are spending days and nights wanting food, wanting water, as they have to defecate in strange places, as they have to look at people die, and as they cover up bodies of old people who die on the scene. It begins certainly as people are jailed in Orleans Parish. It begins as guards beat these prisoners and mace them because they ask for food. It begins as Charlene sleeps on the floor and can't find a bed. It begins and it merges together some class differences, because it must be said that most of those abandoned and left in New Orleans were the poor who could not escape. But it showed those, like some of those, like we have heard from those who have tried to go to school afterwards, and they who called themselves quote unquote middle class realized that they were no better than their brothers or sisters, because we are all only one day or so away from a paycheck which will put us in the same absolute abject poverty and misery. In many ways, this Katrina is a great uniter if we listen to the voices of history. But because of the experiences of Roderick and Charlene, we have come before this honorable court, and we have asked you to look at this evidence, and we understand that we are functioning under the so-called Roman, and I hesitate to say that because I wish we had a better word, under the so-called Roman statute. But that Roman statute says that we have to bring to you clear and convincing evidence of the evidence, material evidence of the crimes which we speak of, and we have. And so we confer you, or we refer you to the evidence that you have heard on the subject of prisoners, and we tell you that this constitutes a violation of the charge number 4, which we have brought, a violation of human rights to be free from torture and other cruel and inhumane and degrading treatment or punishment. That is a violation of charges number 6, the group of charges which says the violation of human rights, not to have adequate health care and the right to adequate housing, and that the evidence that we have brought in terms of just these prisoners show also a violation of group number 9, a violation of human rights to fair trial, to speedy trial, because you cannot have a fair trial if you don't have a trial at all. You cannot have a speedy trial if you don't have a trial. And the liberty, and it's a violation of liberty, not to be released on bail in the security of person. And we see that in our evidence, Roderick was never even charged with a crime. That although he spent many months in jail, that he was, like many other prisoners, released ultimately because there were no valid charges against him. We refer you to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 3, and it says everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person, and to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, Article 10, and says that all persons deprived of their liberty shall be treated with humanity, with respect, and with the inherent dignity of human persons. They have failed. Romel Madison is part of this history, and he has to come and speak for his family. He has to come and speak for Ronald, because Ronald was no longer with us. And he shared with us how in the streets, his brother was butchered. How his brother, who was a witness, his two brothers who were witnesses to the assassination of members or friends of the Bartholomew family on the streets of New Orleans, as police officers shot them down. And as they witnessed this, and then later, Brother Mason, Ronald Mason, was shot as he was seen to be a witness, and as his brother ran to get support, to get some help, and he ran into police officers, other police officers, he found out that the people who had shot his brothers were police officers themselves. And that they didn't just shoot his brother when he was watching, But as he turned his back to seek support, to seek help, as he cried to the system for help, he returned to find that when his brother had went down with only bullets in his shoulders, now he had bullets in his back. That he had been shot 5 times, that they had assassinated, killed him. And we find that the mother, father, and the sisters, that James Brissett, the friend of the Bartholomew family, was killed. But even the mothers, the fathers, and the daughters, and the children were shot at. This type of brutality that we have shown you was also testified to by William Tanner. Tanner tells you how in the attempt to save a friend, a Henry King who had been shot, that he became the victim of brutality. In other words, trying to help people, he became the victim of brutality. And likewise, other friends also were brutalized, the uncle and the brother of Henry King. We find these to be violations that we have visited with you with in our materials which you have presented and which you have when we have given you at the beginning of this the relevant law and the charges which appear in both the brochure with this program as well as the ones that have been presented to the judges. We find that in the group 3 of charges, which we call the violation of human right to life, human dignity, recognition as a person. And those charges are further referenced in this particular document, and we refer to the international covenants which support these charges. We move on to talk about the violation to our women, to our sisters. And we note also in passing that violation number 9 is a group 2, the violation of human right to liberty, security of person, equal protection. Sister Leventhal came to talk about the violation of women throughout the Katrina episode. Women, even before Katrina, sent to Angola prison where men were, and women caring for themselves and their family deemed criminals like Charlene Smith. The failure to open schools and housing and all the disproportionate impact of women, which someone later testified has caused this city to move from a majority of women to a majority of men. Because women had to leave because of these demonic kinds of behaviors which the system was visiting upon us all. Governor's programs, the government's programs to push unhealthy sterilization to take from women their right to bear children and to limit their right to determine what they do with their own body. She talked to you about sexual assaults, and we get the implication that these assaults are by other people, which the police have not protected women from, but also by the police themselves. More police officers than teachers now, and the children must bring to school their own toilet paper. We heard from Stephanie Mingo, and Stephanie moved us, and she talked to us about her struggle. And these sisters, they came ready to testify, didn't they? Right. They moved us, and they moved our hearts as they talked about their struggle to get in housing. And I think it was Stephanie that told us that she was in public housing. And she reminded us, because I know Stephanie was strong and Mrs. Stokes was strong. You remember Stephanie and you remember Mrs. Stokes. But one of them shared with us, they said, why can't we be in public housing? Bush is in public housing. And even though it seems a bit humorous, just think about the absolute absurdity of that position. I mean, we have to not only look at the testimony and the evidence, but we must look at the interpretation of the testimony and the evidence. How can Bush, a criminal himself, stay in a house which is controlled and paid by the public, and she can't even get in a cheap apartment building, a cheap set of housings or project housings. Bush lives in a mansion, yet he's a criminal that kills millions of people around the world. Bush is the cause of much of what we do in his role as the President of the United States, and this is a relevant discussion here because, remember, we are dealing with the codes of internet of internally displaced persons. And they say you must do all you can to put internally displaced persons in the position which they should be. And so what can the United States really do is a question that we must raise. What can they really do if they didn't spend $450 billion in Iraq to kill people and get people killed? What can they really do if money, if even a mere fraction of that money was used to do in New Orleans, where we live, what they did in Europe in the so-called Marshall Plan? 90% of the residents of the housing projects which she shared with us are women. Closing the project crush her ability and many women's ability to return home. Men, she said, can get more response when they complain. The violation of human rights to return, to resettle, which is in group two that we have presented to you, and the reintegration of internally displaced persons is part of what we claim. And the violation of human rights related to missing relatives, because if we remember, Ms. Mingo told us that her mother died, and it took them a long time to even let her know what had happened to her mother. We also visit the guiding principles on international displacement. Displacement shall last no longer than required under the circumstances. All internally displaced people under Article 16 shall have the right to know the fate and whereabouts of missing relatives. Housing as an issue that was visited by Tracy Washington, as she told you, that there was no money ever given for renters to return. Discrimination in housing as so-called blood ordinances were passed in the Bernard Parish, which is being rehabilitated while Orleans Parish is not. 90% of the Bernard Parish, St. Bernard Parish, where they talk about blood ordinances, is white and can only rent to relatives. And I might mention that as you look at most of the publicity around the Katrina and those who are putting this great effort to bring themselves back, and we don't criticize those people, but we must note the racism in it, in the presentation of the information, most of the time is from St. Bernard Parish. Most of the business are the St. Bernard Parish, and yet we now find out that 90% of that parish is white, whereas this parish called Orleans Parish is not visited with the same kind of respect. Willie Mae Stokes, 67 years old, testified that she lived in the Lower Knife Ward. Over 20 feet of water covered her home. That she needs $138,000, they tell her, to rebuild that home, which only cost $6,000 when she built it. That she will only get $17,000 in insurance, that there's $30,000 promised by the government to raise it, even though she won't get it or hasn't gotten it. That the government is supposed to give her $70,000 to help rebuild her home, but she hasn't received it, doesn't know when she will receive it, and when she does receive it, she's going to have to pay them back some of it because of living expenses which she had to encounter. This is not meeting up to those requirements when we realize that they're still spending $450 billion to kill people in Iraq. The violation of human rights is the second group to adequate housing in group six that we have brought these charges. Charge group number seven says the violation of human rights to adequate standard of living and freedom from poverty, the guiding principles of international displacement. Article 6, sections 1 and 3 are relevant here too, that talk about the displacement of people. What causes this delay is that the United States has no commitment to rebuilding the lives of Katrina survivors. They have no commitment to doing the things that the international covenant requires them to do. They don't have a commitment since Katrina, and they didn't have a commitment before Katrina. That testimony is brought to us briefly before the technological difficulties from Robert V, who talks about the levee, and he says the levee was never any good, that the levee was not prepared to withstand the storms, that the government knew the levee could not withstand the storms, and that they had history to prove that the levee could not withstand the storm, and that money was actually allocated in order to make some minimum improvement to the levee, but the levee was never repaired, but the money probably went to some war effort. We talk about the crushing of culture, and I'm going to move on somewhat summarily to pass through these, because I know the good jurist has have looked very vigilantly at these things. But we talk about the crushing of culture, and culture is important. Culture is everything you do. I think someone quoted Amilcar Cabral and said that culture is the seed of revolution, is the seed of the people. Culture is the spirit of the revolution. That's what culture is. But the United States wants no revolution. It does not even want survival. And so what is it to the United States? What is it to the city of New Orleans, which is controlled by functionaries of the United States? What is it to the state of Louisiana to crush the culture of Sharice Marie Harrison Nelson, to crush the culture, a beautiful culture of the Mardi Gras Indians? And what is this Mardi Gras Indian culture anyway? How beautiful is it to represent in a group of people the coming together of one of the magnificent unities in history? The unity of the African seeking to escape slavery with the Indian trying to comfort him from slavery and to take him in for slavery. One of the magnificent period of history when blood met blood and they came together and they created the Seminole Nation. They created the united unities and Africans in the Cherokee tribe, Africans in the Choctaw tribe, Africans and various different other Indian nations which came together. And these were people who would not forget that history. And so what they did is they canonized that history. They incorporated that history, but it was just a history waiting to be stricken by a disaster, or perhaps an episode with the New Orleans police in the street, or if any other of the various different armaments of imperialism. We see how the children were traumatized. Do not forget, and as you go back to deliberate, remember the children. Remember the children painted pictures of themselves, stick men and stick women in their pictures with the waters up to their neck. Remember the children throughout this testimony. Remember the children, as much as anyone, need culture. And so when the brother comes to us, when he comes to us from Mossville, Louisiana, or later on when we talk about the indigenous population from Houma, when Brother Tony, and I will say S to represent his last name, when Brother Tony S comes to us and talks about that population, when the brother from Mossville comes to us and tells us that they have poisoned the land, and if you get poisoned land, that means poisoned food, and since they organically grow their food, then that destroys their way of culture, then we must understand that this is a violation of the international covenants also. And those international covenants have been cited for you. They have poisoned the environment. They have created a situation where in the Mossville situation where they were hit by both Katrina and they were hit by Rita, one from one side of the world and the other from the other side, that most of their land was destroyed and that basically, they had to live in trailers which were contaminated with formaldehyde, other agents of poison. This is in group two of our violation of human rights to resettle and to reintegrate and for internal displace in the situation of the Houma population. Remember this great legislation which occurred, or these ordinances which were passed after the population had been evacuated, after they had left. They voted to have 18 more offshore oil drilling facilities to come in, and these facilities and these oil rigs were already polluting the land and destroying the land that the people live on. These are also gross violations of human rights. Mark Fancher brought to us for the NCBL, the National Conference of Black Lawyers, not only the testimony of Mrs. Horn, but he also referenced other testimony that people had told him about the persons who were taken up into the helicopters and dropped from the sky and killed. But Mrs. Horn told us how she was unable to evacuate, or she was unable to evacuate. She was refused access to the bridge. She said she went down by the bridge and she waited for 2 nights and no one came to rescue them, either her or her companions. People were laying on the bridge. Authorities never tried to rescue the people on the bridge and went, so they went to the convention center. There were no lights, no food, bad conditions, sick people without care, people with seizures, children crying, old woman in the chair dead that they had covered up, dead bodies in the freezer. Dead bodies in the freezer. Let me pause for a moment here to reflect. Dead bodies in the freezer. So much of this testimony makes us to recall the past. Dead bodies in the freezer. Do we recall mass graves in Grenada with the invasion of the United States? The killing of the cohorts of Maurice Bishop and Maurice Bishop himself? Do we recall the atrocities and the bombing of the children and the marriage families in the Middle East by the United States? In fact, perhaps everyone here can share a history where the United States or its predecessors, its Euro-American predecessors, have devastated these same kind of conditions on us. Toward the end of this presentation, as we pass to end it, we're going to show a group of pictures. Short group of pictures which shows the military presence in New Orleans, and I'm going to ask that they be entered as exhibit and that you take them into the deliberation room. It's only 11 or 12. But as you see the people being crowded onto the buses, as you see the huge number of people in the convention center area, as you see them crying and the frets on their faces, as you see the buses and think of the buses carrying this loads of people away from where they knew and where they live, can we remember the Maafa? Can we remember people dying in the Middle Passage and being thrown into the ocean and dying on ships and being crammed into ships like slavery? In fact, do we not remember these things of slavery? As we talk about this formaldehyde, as we talk about people being given environmentally dangerous and deadly conditions, can we not remember the Trail of Tears? And Native Americans being marched across the country to Oklahoma. And this is important because we're going to ask you to, if you feel it is necessary, to expand the specific charges that we have given to you and to consider the charges which may be warranted in case you have heard the right testimony, to consider the charge of genocide. And when you consider the charge of genocide, you must remember that in some instances where it shows motive and intent, and in one of the things that we must demonstrate it when we call it genocide is intent. The killing, we have that here. We have the killing. The members of the group, we have that. We have dead bodies. We have dead bodies. We have dead bodies in Algiers. We have dead bodies in refrigerators. We have, from the affidavit, dead bodies floating in the streets of New Orleans. We have the testimony of Brother Dr. Madison. We have dead bodies. So if we have these dead bodies, what is the intent? Is there a prior practice? Are there similar acts? This wolf that committed this crime, have they been involved, or is this their first offense? And so we must consider the history. Not only is it relevant that Emmett Till came 50 years for this before this incident, but it's relevant to what happened to Emmett Till. Under the cover of government security that allow 100 years of lynching, that said that they could not stop state action, only to, like in 1960s, to come up with court decisions that said that there were decisions or legislation passed in the 1860s that were sufficient to stop these kind of actions if they wanted to stop these actions. So yes, we must consider the background of the criminals here. And the backgrounds will help supply the intent that is necessary to show that this is not only genocide, but it is ethnic cleansing and it is crimes against humanity. But Mrs. Horn talked about what she saw at the convention center. And then we had the testimony brought to us by the Latino brothers who testified, this brother Dennis. And they, you know, and they used this interesting word that they call illegal immigrants. Well, I'm not going to use that word. I'm in a court where I don't have to use that word, right? I'm in a court where we're begging to deal with the truth. And how can we call people illegal for crossing borders which are illegal in the first place?
Right.
And so we talk about Brother Dennis. And Brother Dennis from Honduras talked about how he just lived in fear. It is a violation of the covenants which prohibit slavery. We have reinstituted slavery on both sides. And we've had one of those big words, you know, that bad means bad, right? The maniacal manipulation of our people on both sides. That we have seen the brother that testified, Brother Daniel. He said that they tell the black people that we steal their jobs. And they tell us that the black people are too lazy to work. And it is important that this tribunal speak and that they call this a crime and an action of genocide, because it speaks to so much what happens in the world today. It explains not only present-day conflicts, but historical conflicts between the black man and the red man. It explains some of those conflicts. Because all of them are built upon these same manipulations, lies, and the failure to face the truth. But Brother Dennis is nearly a slave, and he must slip in and slip out. He must try to work, and he works with no protection, so he works and he does not get paid. Yet the brother down the street is mad at Brother Dennis, because he said, because Brother Dennis took my job. Yet they don't know that Brother Dennis is not really imported labor. Brother Dennis is an imported slave. And then we look at Brother Daniel. And Brother Daniel came the quote-unquote right way, right? This is Bush way. He came with the Bush project. And the Bush calls it, what did he call it, a guest worker program. And so here again, it becomes another avenue of slavery. And so what they do is they build the auction block in Mexico. And in Mexico, they say, here, I got 80 visas. And I see 800 people, and so we must have an auction here. Who is the highest bidding? Oh, I'll pay $4,500, all I got, and plus some money I don't have. You win. Now we control you. We have your life, and so when you go across the border, you will work for us. And if you don't work for us, then you become illegal. And so don't try to organize. And international covers give us a right to organize. Try to organize that you will lose this job. Not only do you lose this job, but you become criminals. Do you see the similarities? Do you see that these are not different problems? These are only different symptoms of the problem. Think of our children in school who are trapped, double trapped, triple trapped. Our babies. They are criminals if they don't go to school. They are criminals if they do go to school. They are being prepared for prisons by the school. Their sandwiches are cold. This is a Katrina problem, but it is more than a Katrina problem. They're in schools regardless of where they are. Katrina is so good because it summarizes and amplifies our experience wherever we are. Everywhere they try to put in charter schools which will replace the republic schools, and this is such a violation. And it is in violation, and we don't even understand the violation unless we understand the history behind the violation. Because you see, those public schools were not built by the people who are putting our children out of the schools. The public schools were built by the ancestors of the children themselves. We should understand that even though there was Jim Crow, Jim Crow only came after the first few years after the Civil War. Jim Crow only came after the Reconstruction period. Jim Crow came after Africans had been liberated or had liberated themselves from slavery and had come out into and had become the majority of the legislature in Louisiana, in Mississippi, in South Carolina, in public schools which did not exist in these places began to become existent because Black legislators voted for education, whereas white racist advocates of the plantation system who were in those positions before them had never seen fit to put in public education for the Africans or for the whites. Only people of means could go to school. And so it was our people who built those schools. How do you take children from the schools that their ancestors built and call yourself civilized? It reminds you of, I don't know if it was Thoreau or somebody, some fella who made the statement. They asked him, what do you think about Western civilization? And he said, I think it would be a good idea, right? This is cruel. This is cruel. They talk about people who kill dogs. In one breath, and then in the next breath tell you that the dogs that that person killed, they are about to put to sleep themselves, right? Because there's too many of them, they have no worthwhile purpose, and there's not enough masters for these dogs. Not enough good people to take care of these dogs and act like they love dogs. It is good to have this court. Because in this court, we are not shackled by the boundaries of imperialism. And years of imperialistic culture, which is really not culture at all. Imperialism actually brings you not culture, but the anti-culture. And we are not shackled by those notions. And so we can look and we can seek the truth. We can find truth where we see it, and we can speak truth where we find it. It is important to note that in their testimony, Brother Danielle and Brother from Honduras, Brother Dennis, suggests some of the solutions that we must create to these problems with the help of this tribunal. What they say is that brother from Honduras, Brother Dennis tells us that it was an African-American group, as he called it, quote unquote, that bailed him out of jail. Brother Danielle says that we must come together and we must stop this manipulation, this sinful and evil pattern of behavior which divides us and brings ourselves together. We must destroy the new slavery, and this court must look at group one violations, gross violations of human rights to be free from racial discrimination, including discrimination based upon perceived immigration status. Group two violations, including violations of human rights to return, to resettle, and to reintegrate, which is obviously something that cannot happen as long as people are brought in as new slaves and you do not have the opportunity to work in the hotel that you're only allowed to stay in because FEMA's gonna pay the bill for a few days and then put you out in the street. The right to work in group six, the right to adequate housing, group seven, not only for the Latinos, but also for the Africans. Number seven, the violation of human right to adequate standard of living and freedom from poverty for both the Latino and for the Africans. We are told in the testimony brought by Counsel Christian Cook and Juan LaFanta, state representative. He tells us the racial composition of his district, and if I am not mistaken, you can check your facts. Prior to Katrina was 70%, 30% after Katrina. He says 400 people die of a month, many of broken hearts, psychological pressure, proud people, angry with the right, and according to Tony S., they are not only angry, but they have the right to be angry. And like Tony S. says, he says they not only have the right to be angry, but they have the right to take over. Scare tactics were used to scare voters away from the polls, threaten them with criminal prosecution. If they vote somewhere else and vote in New Orleans, they say, then you will be guilty of a crime. The mail too slow for absentee ballots, yet they expect them to vote. They refuse to give them satellite voting, and do you imagine that? They have people that they have sent to Iraq and Iran that they allow into Afghanistan, and the United States has bases all over the world, everywhere. Here's this country, here's this state, this imperialist empire that claims to be protecting the world from people trying to take over the world, yet they're the only one that has taken over the world. But what they do is they allow, as long as they're on their plane, on their ship, under their control, under their mental manipulation, you can have satellite voting in these places. You can even, if you're voting for the puppet government in Iraq, you can be in Detroit, Michigan and be an Iraqi and vote for the puppet government in Iraq with the facilitation of the United States in satellite voting stations. Yet you can't live in Jackson, Mississippi and satellite vote in New Orleans if you're an internally displaced person and when you have a right to, according to the international covenant. Roderick Dean ran for election and realized that he was hurt in his election because of the fact that they moved polling places, and in some places they didn't have machines that worked, and there was all kinds of dysfunctions in the polling place. We know about that a little bit. We've heard about that. This here, again, is not new behavior. This goes back to the Chinese test during voting. it is more recently recalled in the way that they disengaged and disenfranchise Africans in Ohio, and before that in Florida, as Bush stole the election there. Number 8 of our group of charges say violation of human rights to vote, electoral rights, and right to participate in governance. Tony S. talked about the indigenous population. Katrina was worse than the nine. Tony S. is an expert in working with disaster relief. And he says Katrina was the worst disaster than 9/11, worse than 9/11. Yet 9/11 gets more aid, more corporations, more government attention. Violation of human rights related to privacy, family, life, and missing relatives is also involved here, in addition to the violations, the voting violations, which were in the group that I cited earlier, which is contained in our group of violations as listed in your materials as violations number 8. Environmental housing. Environment. Housing is degraded. In the absence of the population, vote taken to allow 18 companies to establish offshore dwelling oils, like we said. The violation of the right to return is group 2. Right to self-determination and right to association is a violation in group 5 that we have presented to you. Education, the children spoke well for themselves, so I won't speak again for the children. But James Randles helped put things in context when he explained that they came here with and what they did is that they took over 100, and I think the number was 102 schools away from the Orleans Parish school system and gave them either to the state or to charter schools, and that the board itself, the collaborators on the board, that they voted the takeover to a group that didn't even exist yet. In fact, what they did is they voted it over to this corporation that didn't exist yet, then they became the leaders of the corporation. Slick reminds you of Will Clinton. Slick Willie. Slick. Method would have disqualified all Jefferson County schools, the methods that they used in order to say whether the New Orleans Parish schools could continue to exist, would have disqualified all Orleans County schools, not only the Orleans County schools as it did, but it would have disqualified those schools in Jefferson County, which were predominantly white, would have disqualified the schools in Baton Rouge, but they only applied it to the Orleans Parish in order to take over those schools. Fourche, do you imagine what children thought who went to Fourche School, a school which had fought, and I'm a little familiar with Fourche School. It was an African school in the middle of New Orleans. It was essentially of working class and quote-unquote lower class in terms of economic means, brothers and sisters. It was a proud school. It was a school that had a formidable athletic program, won many championships, fought hard in other ones. And yet they come back to school and they find that they no longer have the school, but they've given the school to the white folks. And there was a problem, there was a program to give Fourche School to the white folks even before Katrina. And so it succeeded after Katrina. And we go on with that. Kathy Boshaw, that was working for the Catholic Charities in terms of an advocate, we know her testimony. We know the testimony of Karen Harper Royal, whose son had an educational disorder, and how they had used, in her case, busing or the lack of a bus to deprive her children. And Broderick Reb, Deborah Carey, Rogers Youngblood, Dominique Townsend, Sade Womack, the voices of the youth. They came together and their testimony collectively demonstrated charge 3, the violation of human right to life, human dignity, and recognition as a person. The International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights, where they speak to the question of every child having the right to have undiscriminating education or education without discrimination. The Convention on the Child, which talks about that in Article 6, Sections 2 and Section 1 of the of the same article. We talk about health. Sister Suba, Sister Alice Craft Kearney talked about various different health challenges. Sister Kearney in her testimony talked about the murder of yet another brother, Terry Burton. Because of his mental problems, they murdered him. And we see that $300 million sent to New Orleans, and only 13% of this, or sent to Louisiana, only 13% of it got to the Orleans School District. Dr. Johnson talks about the need of black healthcare professionals, as well as psychologists in order to help. How the children are crying out for this, how other folks are having problems relating to the children. The need for these and the inability of the government or the refusal of the government to provide them is another violation of our human rights. K. Brad Ott, talked about the closing of Charity Hospital and how that was one of the fundamental things, along with the laying off or the firing of all the teachers, which put our brothers and sisters in a situation of no return instead of the right to return, because that was the biggest way that folks were employed. And then we had the testimony of Malik Rahim in the military occupation. He talked about the vigilantes. And here again, we must recall history. We must ask ourselves if these, we know the rigorousness which the American police departments, American state police, American city police, American federal police go about making headlines when they take guns from young brothers and sisters in the black community. Yet we have white people walking around openly talking about the black folks that they killed, showing their guns on video, and yet no one has been prosecuted. We talk about this. We talk about what happened in Gretna. But what happens in Gretna is what happens all over, but it happened here after Katrina, and it is a human rights violation. The government is responsible for those vigilantes. The government bears responsibility because the government knew that they exist. They knew that they exist before Katrina. They trained. They openly trained. And so they knew that they exist before Katrina. He told them that they exist during Katrina, and the government has not moved on them. So the government has tacitly, and it has by policy and by practice, giving them the right to exist, yet at the same time it disarms the black population, tells them if they get guns they will go to jail, they will be killed, even if they're just using guns to defend themselves. This is military occupation. This is what this is military occupation. And so what we have is we have the question of aid dispersal, which we also have testimony on from Sibukwe. Sibukwe raised the relevant question, why not Cuba? Why not aid from Cuba? It's a shame that we need Cuba to come in here and give people aid in a filthy rich country. True. But Cuba, with few resources, has educated its own people, has trained doctors. I've visited Cuba. I have seen it. I have seen where almost a third of the Cuban teacher population go on sabbatical 1 year, so the other two-thirds can teach and the other third can come back fresh the next year. True. We know that in Cuba and in Libya and all the places they condemn, the people get at least 2 years of college, and in Libya they get 4 years of college. Yet we fight here amongst each other trying to get out of high school and into college. In a filthy rich country, in Iraq, before they were bombed in 1991, they had zero illiteracy. Why not Cuba? Why not aid from Venezuela, where somebody has the right to speak the truth to power? Why not? And so we talk about this testimony from Sibukwe, and we also have heard from Wilma Taylor, who tells us that all the questions of aid and all the talk of aid is just a trick. And do you know what that means? The Red Cross is hyping people. And truth be told, if time would have permitted, we could have brought other testimony about Red Cross. It is a racist institution. We got testimony on the Red Cross when we wasn't even looking for testimony on the Red Cross. And this is a hype job. Look, we have people who have been fooled, double fooled, triple fooled. We got these athletes who were fooled when they thought that becoming an athlete somehow would free them, right? And then they think that they're going to be pros, and that's a fool thing to think for most of them. And then when they become pros and they make this money, and then they try to give their money, and they're moved in their hearts, many of them, to give their money to their people in Katrina, who do they give their money to? They give their money to Red Cross, so here they are fooled again. It's a hype job. And the government bears responsibility because the government has helped to discredit historically grassroots programs, which is still in existence, would have been able to take that money and use itself. It was the government that destroyed the Black Panther Party. It was the government that had to lead to the decline of the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa. It is the government that all these indigenous groups and all these communities which have went to help people have helped to destroy them through the counterintelligence programs and otherwise.
Absolutely.
It is the government, the United States government.
Absolutely true.
By the way, not my government, right? Time and money is available to do these things if the United States wanted to, but if Cuba offers, Venezuela offers, why are these things not accepted? Because it is more important to the government, and this is a violation of human rights, that it protects an imperious ideology than it is that it save lives. Because help from Cuba would have meant, or help from Venezuela would have meant, is that Africans, young Africans in the streets of New Orleans would have had the opportunity to be influenced by the revolutionary cultures of other places.
True.
And just like Maurice Bishop was a threat, that program or that offer was a threat, and so the government violated human rights and it refused it. We have heard testimony about many different things, and let me say as I close is that we want to urge upon this court that we look clearly at some remedies. I'm going to ask Brother Kwame, I'm going to ask this be admitted as an exhibit to the closing argument, and it's a document which talks about, it's just one of the things that we want to talk about, but it's on reparations and about an idea of demanding that the United States government pass legislation, a bill which deals with reparations. Those are separate documents. You can, there's one of each of those. You can pass it down if you would. Those are that's, you know, those are news articles. And what we want to do is to ask you for reparations, full reparations. This Katrina debt is part of a overall debt. But at the minimum, we would ask this tribunal to demand total reparations for all of Katrina, and it must be reparations. It is not enough to call it something else. It must be recognized because part of the injury is the refusal to recognize our rights in the first place, refusal to give us full dignity as human beings, refusal to see us as a people. And so if we call it something else, it sounds like ambulance chasing. It sounds like somebody got hit by a car, so give them a buck, you know what I mean? What we are is a people who have been offended. Our rights to self-determination have been destroyed. And so we want reparations, and we ask this tribunal to find that that is what we are entitled to. A report to all human rights agencies and world bodies, including the Self-Determination Committee, the Human Rights Committees in Geneva and others, on your findings here, as we ask that to be the second verdict, and a demand that the United States report or justify its behavior. We also ask for you to call on nations to support petition to the International Court of Justice to bring before the International Court of Justice the crimes of Katrina and the crimes against our people. We call for prosecution and punishment of the United States President. We ask you to call for that. And the officials of FEMA for the government of the crime, for the complicity of the governor of Louisiana when she called to shoot to kill, and for all the local police officers and the mayor himself if you should find him guilty. Sometimes a brother got to go down, right? If you should find him guilty, that they be prosecuted for what they have done, and certainly the police agencies and the police individuals for these crimes against humanity or these crimes that you have found in violation of human rights, if you so find. We call for the support to the groups which are helping in the Katrina situation, to the People's Hurricane Relief Fund, which has helped put up this conference, to the Mississippi Disaster Relief Coalition and the U.S. Human Rights Network, who are also co-sponsors of this conference. We call for help for the people Hurricane Relief Fund Coalition partners who are working in the street and on the ground, including but not limited to strong, safe streets, strong communities, advocates for environmental human rights, also for common ground and critical resistance. So we call, and this is not just limiting to those, and your call should not be limited to those, but those are ones that we suggest that they be noted at least, and any others that you should find worthy of notation. Other organizations and survivors, led by survivors, working in the true interest of survivors on the ground in an important national and international arenas should be supported. Number six, we call for review. We call that you call for an established review by a Council of Survivors, or at least call for. Council of Survivors, recognized by this court or its designates, that these Council of Survivors review all charges brought against Katrina and Rita survivors as a result of Katrina-related events during and after August the 29th of 2005, and that these this council be empowered to demand the dismissal of all charges where they find them to be unworthy and unjustified. We call for the recognition of and call for support for the Second People's Survivor Assembly, which will occur in December of 2007, I think that's the 8th and the 9th, in New Orleans, and that we embrace that, and hopefully some of you jurists will be able to join us at that here in New Orleans. And number eight, that you maintain in jurisdiction to entertain any possible future charges that you do not find in this particular indictment based upon future evidence. We call for you to find genocide here from if you find it in the evidence, but if you find that you need more evidence, then we ask you to maintain jurisdiction, because we know that we have just scratched the surface with this testimony. And we also called for the same kind of consideration as far as crimes against humanity or ethnic cleansing, if necessary, to determine, amend, or modify the remedies which you come up with today. We call for your support and your call for the peoples of the world to engage in mass mobilizations in support of the brothers and sisters and the comrades in the affected areas. And so what we say in closing is this. We must indeed make history. And we must make history within the legacy of all of our revolutionary ancestors. From all over the world, we have come here today, and this has been a step in the right direction, a step of courage. We've come to one of the only courts that our people can look at and really expect justice. Nowhere else in the United States can we be sure that we will get justice. We have sought all kinds of manipulations of the justice system. We've gone to courts which are prepared to convict us or to deny us relief regardless of what we say. We've gone to courts which have temporarily granted relief because they have heroic judges or sometimes heroic jurors, just to see those judges prosecuted or thrown out of office, and to see those jurors scattered or diffused by legislation in states which take those courts out of power and make them integrate, quote unquote, with other courts which dilute them of their power. Dilute the African of the right to sit on a jury in the majority. And with all the propaganda which has injured our people's right to find justice, and so this is one of the only courts that we can come to and expect justice, and we are confident that we will receive it. I want to once again thank all of those who have participated. We want to thank the judges who have participated, the conveners who have participated, all the brothers and sisters who have participated. We want to promise you that this won't be the last time, that we will come back as many times as we need to, and we will convene a court as many times as we need to, because we must have justice, we will have justice, And we thank all of you. We thank you, justices, for your attention and free the land. Right. Excuse me. In ending. Oh, I've got it. In ending. Just very briefly. Just very briefly. I almost forgot my job here. Just very briefly, these are some pictures you need to see and you want to see. I'm going to show it. It will only take a few minutes. Can we? We're going to show some pictures on the screen here. Blow it up. Just hold it there until I get my paper. That's the first one, right? Here we go. This is a picture of the military presence of the National Guard and the United States. I'm not sure whether this is a U.S. or a National Guard, but it's one of them. And coming in at Saks Fifth Avenue, the end of Canal Street, near where the Algiers Ferry is, but it's on the New Orleans side. This is New Orleans right here. This is one of those tanks. This is a picture on Canal Street of a tank loaded with New Orleans soldiers.
These are state police.
Yeah. State police, loaded with state police, Louisiana state police. And if you notice, not that it always makes a difference, but if you notice, there's not a chocolate one in the bunch, right? Okay. Next. This is the top of the bridge of I-10. And you can see the guns trained on the brother. And we know about the brothers and sisters who have died. Okay. And then we have number four, Lafitte. It's called Lafitte Public Housing Projects. This is one of these housing projects that they prevented people from coming back to. And we just see the police there with their high-powered rifles. It looks like a AR-15 or M16. That would be AR-15 if it was commercial. But M16 that they got trained in their hands, right?
Those are the snipers.
We see here where they have their sign, "We are taking New Orleans streets back." And this is the police. And this is in the bus station in New Orleans.
Which is converted into a prison,
that's right. Then we see pictures here of the escalator by the convention center. And these are police coming up in the masses into that center. They couldn't save the people who were in the streets, but they could come in there and put guns on them like they were dogs. Okay, then we have the next picture of same thing. This is near the river walk, which is near the convention center, actually. More police coming and a different angle of that picture. There is a chocolate one in that group, okay? Now the next one is here on number eight. We have the this is the convention center again. We thought this was the Superdome at first, but this is the convention center. More police activity, high power rifles. And so this answers the question of what they came with. Okay, then we come to Mid-City, and this is in the Claiborne area. We think it's on Claiborne Street near Basin Street. And this is here again, more evidence of this military presence. Okay. And then number 10, we come to our people suffering at the convention center. This is a picture where they're getting ready to get on the bus. When the bus finally showed up after 3, 4, or 5 days.
Persecution.
Okay. Then the next picture we have reminds you of perhaps one of the pictures as people were about to be put on the slave ships. And this is right here at the Metairie. This is Metairie near I-10. Metairie is also not far from the airport.
The Causeway.
Is that the Causeway?
Okay.
Metairie, the Causeway, okay. Okay, then the next one is I-10, showing the military presence rolling into the city. Okay. Okay. A year later. Okay, that was after the initial. So the military attention is still there. And then we had a picture that we saw already, I think, near the Huey P. Long Bridge. Is this the European Long Bridge? Mm-hmm. Okay, the Huey P. Long Bridge, them checking people's IDs, keeping that military presence going. All right. They couldn't come in to save the people, but they come in to do all the things they do in our community every day to harass us. And this is more of that military presence. And this is in somewhere in the city. We're not sure exactly where this is, but these are other soldiers. And that's the end of that visual presentation. Thank you again. Thank all of you, and give yourselves a round of applause.
Your honors,